The Upland Nomads podcast is brought to you by two guys that share a common passion, chasing birds and following our dogs through some of the most beautiful landscapes in the world, the uplands. Join us while we have in-depth conversations with others from all over the country that enjoy and share the same passions as us. Welcome to the Upland Nomads podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Upland Nomads podcast. It's been a hot second since we did recording, but we got the Iowa boys in with us tonight. Jared Gaskill and Steve Hall, cast iron kennels and wildfire kennels. Boys, want to tell us a bit about yourself?
Go ahead, Steve. Oh, all right. I'll go first. My name is Jared Gaskill, wildfire kennel. We're kind of in the west central part of the state, and I'm an Iowa boy with raised and been generation a little bit unique. Moved back from Iowa State in 2015 and started farming with my parents, and got some other side gigs on the side and keeping busy. Raising dogs, raising kids, and short and sweet.
Nice. You got your fingers in a few different businesses, don't you?
I do, yeah. So I got a spray foam insulation business. Started that 2 years ago with a buddy of mine, and been pretty busy with that. And then kind of when I'm not farming and doing that, ever since I got out of college in 15, been doing a lot of security cameras and access control with my cousin. He's got a business in town here that he started. And so we've been doing that. He's got, there's probably 8 employees, I think. So doing that and spray foaming and farming and dogs.
Dog food.
Dog food. And Nuckshuck reseller. So that's been, just started that here this last year. So about a full year in on that. It's been pretty good.
Jack of all trades.
Yeah, master of none, though. That's kind of the key.
Are we all?
Just gotta throw my hand into the fire every which way.
I forgot that you did a security camera, too.
Yeah, that's kind of – I mean, as far as hour-wise goes, I probably spend the most hours doing that job. I mean you know, it's in the off season, it's 5 days a week. And, you know, now that I'm starting to spray foam, I'll do a day or two a week doing that.
You guys spray foam in summer too, or no?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. That's pretty much year round, you know, weather dependent a little bit. I mean, we did invest in a big indirect heater here this last, about 2 weeks ago, to help keep the houses and stuff warm. While we're foaming, so that was a big investment. But
do you have to do anything with spray foam when it's super hot outside?
When it's super hot, it's more so on your body. Guys are spraying that in Florida and, you know, all these hot climates all year long. Cool. You know, and it I don't know. We've definitely put in some hot days, and I call them a meth suit. I mean, you're basically wearing a big Tyvek suit and, you know, a full respirator mask, and it gets very, very hot. So it's, you kind of play the weather a little bit based on what you can take and in a safe manner too. I mean, drink tons of fluid, and, you know, eventually you gotta be smart and just quit if it's stupid. So.
Right. Yeah, we don't quit when it gets stupid, but I can't imagine that old attic in the house.
Yeah.
Feel really good.
Right, yeah.
If you're going to be stupid, you better be tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Or dumb,
yeah. I don't know. I do a lot of dumb shit, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's kind of the little spiel with me, I guess. I got 3 kids. 5, 3, and 10 months. boy, girl, girl. So it's been a lot of fun, but trying to balance all the activities that I'm doing, and you know, married and the three kids. It's my wife is very good and understands what I'm trying to do, and you know, takes an army to raise a family. So we're glad to have it.
You match, you get your dogs, boy, girl, girl, too.
Yeah, actually, I do. Huh. I never thought of it that way. Yep. Well, I'm getting another female pup here next year, so I sure hope there's not another kid coming. We're supposed to be done. Oh, shit. Oh, yeah, I never thought of that. That's kind of funny.
Yeah, I just was like, wait, this one is dogs, boy, girl, girl, too.
But yep.
I remember, I was like, I think Jax is older, but
yeah, he's four. Yep.
Yeah, kind of not too much of a different story than Jared. I'm a farmer as well. My, I guess if you want to say specialty is hogs. I built two hog barns in 2019, September of 19, the first hogs went into it. And I raise about 15,000 fat hogs a year. And I've been involved with raising dogs since about 2001. I started with Irish setters. And I raised them through high school and then a little bit into college. My wife just walked in with our oldest daughter. They just got back from dance. I got three kids, Hannah, Charlotte, and Heidi. They're 8, 5, and 3. And we are busy in the competition dance world with those guys. My wife's a school teacher. We farm row crop here too, and just kind of stay busy doing all sorts of stuff. I do a little bit of cooking for some catering stuff here and there. And I used to be a nuisance wildlife control officer, was a professional trapper for a short period. I don't know, did all, was a manager of a co-op, agronomist, bought grain for ADM, kind of did everything there's to do around here just about. And my favorite thing has been the dogs for sure. Raise English setters here. And that's really my passion is the dogs. I really enjoy that. Kind of figure if you got to do something like the hog work, that's not like, that's hard to love, right? But I do love working with the dogs, so it's fun to kind of have something that's enjoyable. Not to say everything about hogs is not enjoyable, but it's, that's straight up work.
That sounds like your last month that was very fun with the hogs.
Yeah, we had a bad case of PRRS this last herd here, and we're dealing with that. I'm close to 1700 dead, so dragging out dead pigs, you know, day after day after day after day is kind of disheartening. But
what do you do with all the dead pigs?
Compost or render. Gotta get them out of there, you know.
Right.
Yep. So hauled a lot of dead pigs away.
How does that disease catch in with pigs? Is it?
It's a virus. It travels really well on fog, and we had a whole bunch of fog early in December, and it just floats in. You can't keep it out. If it's in the neighborhood, you're probably going to get it. Travels on wind and moisture, so foggy days. And about the only way that I think we can get ahead of it is to get to summertime, which kind of stinks because I'll start loadout in March, and I'll get another herd before we get to hot and dry. So I'm really hopeful that I don't catch it again, but I don't think I'm going to be able to escape it. I'm probably going to have to go through it again, but it's everybody always asks, you know, how do you have insurance against that? It's not my pigs. It's my site, my barns, my property, and I'm responsible for the care and maintenance and utilities for the company that I raise for. So the loss is theirs, but it costs me the labor. I had to hire friends to come pull hogs out. You know, they'd get done with their day job and we'd go pull hogs for a couple hours every night for 10, 15 days. And then you're burning more propane to keep the barns warm because those pigs aren't in there creating heat. They're laying around being sick. I mean, they're feverish and don't feel well. So they're not growing and putting off much body heat. So you're paying more propane and labor and a ton of more work for yourself. But there's not much you can do besides just buckle down and do it. It kind of sucks, but there's only one way through.
So those hogs are like no good to eat or anything.
No, no, they're fine. It's just the ones that the weak ones, they just don't stand a chance. It's so it's a respiratory disease, and they just fever out. They just waste away. And so it's really rough. They need to figure out a way to. I've talked to some guys, and they say there's a gene that you can delete from their genetic makeup, and that's 8 to 10 years away. There is a herd in Nebraska that they have done that with, but to make it commercial is not feasible yet. And the pushback on that is that people are afraid to, nobody wants to eat, you know, a GMO pig. They are concerned about changing the genetic makeup, but gene deletion does not qualify as genetic modification. So that's probably the route they're going to go, but they're talking like 8 to 10 years out. I'm like, that is too far away. Like, how can you put up with this much death loss continuously for another 10 years? It's insane. I mean, it's me, my neighbors, the neighbors' neighbors. It just bing, 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 every site in the area, it just floats in. I mean, they need to do something fast, and it's out of our hands, but hopefully in 8 to 10 years, they'll have that, the PRRS gene deleted from a majority of the hog population, but who knows? I mean, I would hate to keep pulling pigs like that every single winter. That's sad. Such a waste.
So it's not something that like you can filter, no. Filter the disease out, like,
no. Through your hog some filtration disease. It'd be really difficult because you get one pig sick. I mean, then the next pig gets it. I don't think it's possible. You'd have to put them in a bubble, and even you could not do it because you'd still have feed trucks coming in, and you'd have transportation vehicles coming in and out, and chores, and it just, no. So I hopefully we can get there sooner than later, but it's not now. I don't know why they wouldn't push harder to push that through cost, I suppose.
Is that like the leading death and like a kill off in a hog site, or
say that again?
Is that like the lead, like what's, is that be like one of the top
that's
of like kill off?
There's different strains of it. This one, the strain that I've got apparently is quite deadly. Like neighbors are losing 50 to 80% of their herd. I'm more like a third of a loss right now or whatever, you know, but, and they're like, oh, that's doing really good. I'm like, it really sucks regardless. So I don't know what the answer is, but hopefully they figure it out.
All right.
But no, the dogs is what I really enjoy. Of course. I mean, they're a lot more enjoyable to work with than hogs.
They reciprocate some love, I suppose.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they like you, and hog try to bite you.
Well, we get off the topic of hogs, and let's get into our next topic. How did you guys the season go?
Good. I mean, we're, at least in my opinion, we were down bird number-wise, but, you know, the memories, I guess, that were made this year were pretty awesome. Met a lot of really cool people, and just had a great time.
Dude from North Dakota,
right? Yeah,
I don't know.
I took in this big fella from North Dakota for a few days and showed him the ropes.
I don't know. He was a sharpshooter, though.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, I agree. Quail numbers were maybe up just a tiny bit. Pheasant down just a hair. It was good. My season kind of went to pot because in December I lost a sister. She got cancer and died. So that took a good chunk of time out of our season, which is, you know, we're not going to change that. But the hunting and the people that we met and the things that we did, my computer's about to die. So I'm just getting it plugged in. The season itself was great. I would have liked to go a lot more.
Yeah, you guys had a stretch there where you guys hunted with how many people?
A
I
lot.
think I had 25 people spend the night, at my house within about 8 days. We had a ton of people through. I hosted a women's hunt, and Jared helped facilitate that. Was one of our guides, and we had six guests for that. And then we had the Hunt and Dicks podcast crew on. That was how many was there? Four, six. Kate,
Four or five.
Bethany, Amy, Marie, Nikki.
Five.
Five? Am I forgetting somebody? I'm sorry if
I
I've
think five.
if I'm slipping on somebody, but about 10 people there, and there was a couple guys that were tagging along. And so we did that, and then we had the Flush podcast came down, did a show with me. And then I had my ninth annual friends hunt. Everybody comes in, and that's fun. We have like a white elephant gift exchange, and we drink a bunch of good whiskey and cook some good food. Next year will be 10 years. That's hard to believe, but those guys will crash in the house. And that's kind of what we modeled the women's hunt after, try to make it a realistic event, but open and inviting to women. And I wanted our girls specifically to see that women can and do hunt. So, but yeah, season was great. Wish it wasn't over.
Hey, don't you guys still have a couple days left for quail?
Yeah, quail.
Yeah. We tried,
What?
we went out Sunday
Sunday.
afternoon.
Yeah,
We went
Jared
out,
texted me
but
and I was like, oh yeah, finish chores. We'll go. You bet we didn't see
well,
anything.
now we seen one hen. That was it. I mean,
It
it
was
was super nice out. It was warm, and yeah, I
a good
wasn't
walk.
expecting much. And we each brought her the youngest pups and just let them kind of have their own little hunt. And actually, it was pretty good. Steve's pup George, he went on point pretty well, like 30 yards in.
Yeah.
And my pup was on the other side of the creek. She was honoring it. It was pretty cool. So would have been nice to have something pop up, but I'm sure it was just an
Right.
old scent, but
Yeah,
still
that was
pretty cool.
cool. Yeah.
Georgie, little Georgie.
Yep. He's gonna be a stud, I'm afraid. I'm excited about him.
I'm afraid.
I'm gonna have to hunt more.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Darn
Darn
it.
it.
That's what I tell my wife too. Yeah, hunt more. River's a year older now. You can hunt more.
Since we've been out of season, I've already moved the wrong direction on my belt loop one hole. So that hunting is good for you.
Yep.
That's why I wear those stretchy pants every day. You can't
Yeah.
tell.
Yeah, you really not better not wear spandex next year. That's weird, man. Walking around with leggings.
Oh.
Well,
Acme, they don't
no,
care.
it was good. You came out and we got you your first quail. Spoiler alert. That was fun. I think you did
Yeah,
that with
well,
Jared, but you didn't get
yeah,
any
I got.
quail. You didn't get any quail with me, did you?
No, he stole all the quail.
Yeah.
You shot a
He
double,
shot.
which with your over and under. That was pretty sweet.
Double
Yeah,
on
that one.
quail?
Yeah, he
Yeah,
had a
my
double.
first covey I ever saw.
That's badass.
And it was a pretty good sized covey too. That was pretty
We
cool.
literally, Jared and I walked to like a corner of one field, and we were coming over. I think we came across the one terrace, and then we're like walking across the field into the CRP. And I think I took like one step, no dogs around me, and boom, covey got up right in my face.
Isn't that cool? Covey a
Yeah,
quail.
tickled your balls as they flew up.
Yeah, somehow I got a double off of that first covey rise, but then I got a bunch of crap because I didn't kill a male. So
I think
I
he
did
thought I
have
was pretty serious for a while.
I thought you guys were serious. Well, I know some people are serious, and I was like,
Well, yeah, right.
the first one I knew it was a female. The second one was a further shot, and I wasn't sure what it
I
was.
barely remember.
Unless
Like,
they're crossers, you can't tell. At least in my opinion, I can't tell, and it
I
just
said
is what it is.
the two singles I shot with you on the last day I was there,
Yep.
those ones I could tell,
Yep.
but
You got one of each there, didn't
yeah,
you? Yep.
male or I
Yeah,
don't
what
know
I
what to
thought.
call them.
Yeah, that was the weekend after Thanksgiving. You came in on Friday, right?
Yeah,
he came in and,
Friday, Black Friday, you hunted with Jared, and Saturday you hunted with me. Then Sunday we had Thanksgiving at my house, so you hunted with him. And then did we hunt Monday or was that it? I don't know.
I went home by myself on Monday, and then I kind
of. That's right. You went north of it. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I forget.
What did you think of our hunt Friday?
It was fun. That was the hunting was like just what like normally do with the group.
Right, but, right.
The banquet was pretty sweet. That was I would have mentioned that too because the box hunt was pretty fun. I've never been anything a part of anything like that. Like Michael knows we don't have anything like that around here. Yeah. They have like a box hunt where they get it's on the honor system. You're supposed to only have 25 shells, but I'm sure people with auto loaders go a little crazy. Right. But
well, I need three shots to shoot one, so I mean, if not more.
So then they had teams of four, and you see if you can shoot your limit, and then bonus birds, your quail, and then they. There's two teams that had 12 roosters. They came down with their quail, and all the money went back to did it go back to the Pheasants Forever. To the
bar? No, it just goes to the winners, and they usually just throw it on the bar for the tab. This year we had it was the most teams. We had 27 teams. I think there was I don't remember if there was like 140 some roosters. Would that be right?
I think that was wasn't 144 roosters or something like that, and 29 quail.
Yeah, a little down on the quail, but it was still pretty cool. And then so we do that in the city shed, and then everybody cleans all the birds, and then go across the street to the bar, and there's a bunch of local hunters that they go in the kitchen and start cooking, and you know everybody passes a hat, throw some money in, and they bring you pheasant out to you, and sit there and drink beer and eat pheasants. Pretty good.
That sounds pretty fun.
Yeah, so, it's something to do. I look forward to it every year. It's kind of a, you know, just like anything, you go to some place where you have the same interests as somebody else. It's always fun hearing everybody's hunting stories and what they ran into. Usually there's, you know, coons and all kinds of random shit that gets shot during the day. And, you know, everybody has a good story to tell.
Yeah, I am talking to just some other random guy that was sitting at our table too. And
yep.
For the Beachley guy, I believe.
Yep. Jesse. Yeah. He's on our Pheasants Forever chapter.
Saw him tonight. His daughter's in dance. It's his birthday today.
Yeah.
So happy birthday, Jesse.
No, he was good to talk to too. And just everybody you met there was kind of like being at a pheasant fest. Just everybody like-minded. Plus they tossed all the meat and sauces. So every time they brought a new batch over, it was a different type of sauce.
That sounds good.
It's pretty good. Yeah,
the sriracha ones were
the sriracha was good.
Thai chili ones were good too.
I got some pheasant. I've been thinking I'm going to make in the general's house. I'm making me hungry, boys.
Yep.
I got a bunch sitting in the freezer right now. I was going to turn into jerky, but.
I've never had pheasant jerky. Is it any good?
Yeah, I made it last year, and it's pretty good.
Really?
I did, I got that, is it like that Ichiban, that sauce that's in the bottle, you know, at like Walmart or Target. And it was like a hot and spicy one. I tossed that in a bowl with took a bunch of pheasant meat to the meat slicer and sliced them thin and couple other things to try to make like a sweet and hot jerky, and it turned out pretty good. My brothers actually hammered it when they were here the one day, so I didn't get much of it.
Nice.
But it's a good way to get rid of some pheasant.
For sure.
A lot of nuggets, some soup, stuff like that.
Done.
And we were up in South Dakota this year, and we made pheasant noodle over. Well, we're supposed to be over biscuits, but Steve forgot the biscuits. So we made it over. Did we do mashed potatoes or what did we use?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. We did, didn't we? No.
Yeah. I think We just did instant mashed potatoes or something. Yeah.
Yeah. We went and made it. We're like, we're on the phone. He's in Walmart in the other town, and I'm in the Walmart in town here. And I'm like, yep, get this and get that. And we split it all out, and I left biscuits.
Left a bag in the fridge.
I don't know. Whatever. We were ready to go hunting. And I was getting hogs in that day.
Yep. We were waiting. We were waiting.
I think I got last load of hogs in. I'm like, all right, let's go. And we hit the door and we got everything but whatever was in the fridge, like a kielbasa sausage, you know, whatever.
Yeah, because this was a couple days after I left. You guys turned around and went to South Dakota.
Went to South Dakota.
Yep, pretty much.
That was a good hunt. We went hunting with my buddy Matt up there. Jared's buddy too now. He got been a couple times. But I shot I've got some family land connection stuff up there, and I shot a bird off of that. The land that was my grandpa's family's, I was able to harvest a bird off of that. And so I got that at the taxidermist. I'm pretty excited to have got that done. Took me 3 years. Jared shot one later in that walk.
Yeah, like 10 minutes later.
Yeah.
Shit, this isn't that hard.
Yeah, I pushed it right to you, fucker.
You pushed the one the day, was it the day before? I was shooting at that one that was a mile in the air.
It's high. It's 1,000 yards in there.
Yeah, that would have been pretty cool if I could have dumped
him. We've got a couple properties that are worthy of walking, likely to catch a rooster. And Jared said, you want to wear my GoPro? Yeah, whatever. I never had. And there was a footage there, and I'm wearing it, and I'm like, he's never going to hit that. And then you hear boom, 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 and that pheasant's a mile high cruising away. It was funny.
You're going to put a video together at the end of the year, Jared, or what?
No, that's the I don't really do much with it. I like to go back and watch it on my iPad, and sometime I should actually try to sit down and edit it. I don't have the patience, but.
Trouble, I'd be glued to the editing.
Yeah.
I just need to get better at wearing it. Yeah. So I had mine down over in Iowa, too, and I was like, God, I should, but I was like, God, I just don't like wearing it.
I know it is kind of annoying, but I don't know. It's kind of neat. And every once in a while, if I've seen something that was really cool, or one of the dogs did something cool, I'll pull it off and throw it on an Instagram or something, just as a little clip. But yeah, most times it's just kind of for, I don't know, going back and seeing what happened or whatnot.
Forget Wyatt. Did you limit multiple? You hunted 3 days in Iowa. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
I limited on roosters multiple days.
Yeah, not you'd be really unlikely to limit out on quail where we're at.
Yeah.
At
least we got some. That's what's kind of fun. Well,
I got some of the first walk. So
yeah.
Yeah. So going back in time here a little bit, what got you guys into upland hunting?
It's awesome.
Yeah, that's so true.
When I was a kid,
next question.
Next question.
When I was a kid, you know, my dad went every so often, you know, just like a Thanksgiving type of deal. We'd get together with his family and my grandparents, which is where I live now. I remember walking this little grove, or not grove, windbreak. And, you know, I wasn't even old enough to carry a gun. I just tagged along and I remember that. Yeah, I just remember one walk in particular. You know, we got to the end and two roosters popped up and my dad shot one and my uncle shot one. And then just after that, I just kind of got hooked a little bit. And I got my first short hair when I was 14. Got my first short hair, and it's just kind of, the rest has been history. I've just been addicted to it. And as you know, as you always say you know, adult money, you just kind of keep getting more invested in it, I guess you would say. But yeah, that's kind of how I got started. Just as a kid, every so often going out with my dad you know, that's kind of how I got started.
So we kind of talked about your hunting season, like this past season, but what was like a typical season for you guys look like? I know Iowa opens a little bit later.
Last Saturday of October is when we open, and a lot of times, like most states in pheasant country, harvest isn't quite finished yet, but try to hit the ground running. But being both farmers, we are usually pretty chained up trying to get harvest in. Really doesn't get really totally free until about Thanksgiving, you know, usually. This year was exceedingly dry, so harvest went really fast. Nobody had any, you know, moisture to slow them down. So hunt pretty hard November, December. Then it starts to get pretty cold, you know, about Christmas time. Yeah, that you start seeing the guys, the diehards are the only guys out there then, you know, slows down.
You guys get a lot of out-of-staters, like in your area, besides some guy from North Dakota?
Pretty difficult, unless you know somebody, because it's land is majority private. Right. There is public hunting, but the public hunting gets hit pretty hard, even by the locals.
I found that out too. Just one day, I hunted by myself on the way back up to Minnesota.
I took Nick to that place that you hunted, Nick Martin, the Iowa Bird Chaser. Yep. What's up, dude? And he actually shot his first 3-bird limit ever there, which shocked me that he'd never done that. But he's kind of playing a different game. He is he grew up hunting public land, and which I've done it too, but a lot of, you know, I mean, limited on public land multiple times, but he is trying to just take one from every deal. But yeah, they're there, but right. Late season, it's tough. I mean, they've been picked on. So yeah. No, we do. Yeah. I think in the last couple of years, I've seen more pickups with out of state license plates, but you're kind of don't have a lot of luck unless you get in good with somebody or know somebody, because it is majority private land. It's most land here is farmable.
Yeah. There's definitely different counties that have more, but you know, in our particular area, there's not a ton.
You guys just upland hunt, or do you guys venture? You guys got some big whitetail down there. I know, I saw some.
Yeah. I'm pretty well upland right now. I just got a lot of stuff going on, and I can only focus and want to focus on one thing right now. So I'm pretty much upland. I used to deer hunt back when I was in college. I bow hunted a little bit. And actually when I was in high school, I was really big into coyote calling. We did quite a bit of coyote hunting. And but yeah, pretty much the last, I don't know, probably the last 8 years or so, I've been pretty much upland.
Yeah, about the same kind of same story. Grew up pheasant hunting, started as a kid, and then I got into deer hunting, and pheasant numbers went way down in what, like Jared, like let's say like 09 to 16, 17, yep. They tanked. So yep. I got into waterfowl pretty big, used to chase, I love field hunt geese, still love that, but I did it one time this last season. It's fun. I sold most all my gear. So I just went with a friend that had extra, which was awesome, but used to bow hunt. I've shot more deer than I can remember, be honest with you, but, just kind of, you got to pick what you're going to do, right? I've got, 15,000 hogs going through the barns every year, and 3 kids and dance. And so the bird hunting is basically all I do anymore. And a little bit of ice fishing. Kids like that, and that's fun too. I like to get out and do that.
There's something like not as much, there's work that has to be done with upland hunting, but you can just take the dog and go.
Yep, right. Agreed.
Whereas like archery's tough, you can't just, you can just take the bow and go, but your chances of success aren't very high.
Right. Well, and right now we got EHD so bad. I mean, it is terrible. I think this year I seen more dead deer than I seen alive. It's really bad in Iowa.
You got that dead hit? You got that dead hit in here?
Oh yeah, you want to see it?
Yep, it's Sean.
Yeah, I show Michael that dead hit.
And I've had this conversation
today. Can you see that, Michael?
Yep, I can see that. That's crazy. Where'd you?
Well, I can't give you coordinates, but.
Well, yeah. But it was just laying there,
laying down along the creek. Yeah, he at least in my opinion, I think he still had velvet on him. You can see just a little bit on him, and then he still has all the pricklies or whatever you'd call that. You know, he hadn't had a chance to rub those off yet. kind of a shame. And there's been, I've seen a couple of pictures of even a few bigger ones that bigger than that have been dead. I had a cousin rough score that. He's a huge whitetail hunter. He rough scored it at 186, maybe, I think is what he rough scored it.
Wow. So, that's pretty nice. So did when you found it, was it pretty well decomposed already by then? Or
yeah,
was it pretty...
nothing left.
Yeah, nothing left. Okay.
I was probably ate it up too good.
Yeah. I mean, he would have been the following year. You know, it would have been, he would have been in August. We found him in, we were planting in April. You know, and I think he had velvet, so he would have been, you know, laying there for however long since last fall. So.
Yeah.
With that too, not easier or whatever, but if you miss a rooster, so what? If you miss a 190 inch buck with your bow, you're going to be sick. I mean, it's just,
oh man,
the level of commitment is different. Like every rooster,
they're targeting
great.
One or two and we're, you know, we're out there targeting them all.
You're moving and it's, you know, you're getting, you're not just sitting in a stand freezing. And I mean, it's, it, they both have their pros and cons, but you know, a good rooster is about any rooster. And you know, there's definitely a division between good deer. So the pressure isn't as great.
Yeah.
I've definitely felt bad missing a rooster over an easy point.
Yeah. But I did that keeps you going.
I don't know. I missed my puppy's first rooster point. You know, she had been tagging along right towards the end of the year and she's been honoring everybody's points, which was awesome. And we hit this last little ditch and I just decided to just take her out, you know, and this was only like a week before the season ended and I didn't even throw a vest on. I just grabbed the gun and threw whatever shells was in there. I didn't put a vest on or anything. And walk up, she had a nice point, walk up rooster, and it kind of was a swinger, I guess you would say. I shot three times and missed the damn thing. Oh, I felt sick. It's like, oh no, she was running after it. I think she would have grabbed it and brought it back, but oh well.
Shot is the reward.
Yeah,
we were having a debate one time after work one day, and we were talking. Well, like the hardest birds to hit might be the ones you're like most prepared for.
Yep.
Like you're walking in and you're the one that I was like, I can shoot a bird pretty easy on like dogs on point and I'm walking in and the bird gets up, like that's just reactive. But when I gotta go kick the bird up, those are the ones that miss.
Yep.
Those two easy ones.
Right. Not the one that Jared got on video though. That one didn't miss.
Yeah, you kinda pounded him. That was a good shot.
Yeah. Didn't let them go very far. Either.
Nope.
Those ones that get nervous, like you're like, okay, I gotta let it like go.
I think I even videoed you and I said, don't miss.
Yeah. You did. I saw that.
Yeah, because those are the ones that are like, okay, you know it's gonna be a close shot because it's gonna get up right in your face, and you sit and think about it, and you're like, okay, I got to let it go just a little bit. And then you let it go, and it's gone too far, and you're like, what the hell did I just do?
Yeah.
So I just rather dust them.
And if you are listening to this and you can't relate to that, you haven't hunted enough. Because that will happen. That easy one that you think you're going to shoot that gets away, that's coming.
Well, and roosters, they scare the crap out of you sometimes, too.
Right.
Michael, how many birds have you gotten hit with?
How many birds have I gotten hit with?
Yeah, there have been a couple birds that hit you.
Yeah, back. It's usually hens, though, but they get up like right between my legs. It had to be probably three or four. I've just been stepping over, and they whacked me in the ass.
I stepped on a couple hens this year.
That one day when we were talking, we're like, yeah, Cash is prowling me back. And you literally called it like before we left the trucks to go hunt the place. You know, yeah, Cash will probably be like back someplace, back 100 yards in the thicket, and we'll have to go back and find him on point. And we got back to the trucks, and Michael's brother and I were talking by the trucks, and like, God, where's Cash? And then I already had taken my vest off, so I didn't have my GPS, and I turned around, and here's Cash right on point, right in front of the trucks. I was like, Michael, here's your wish. he goes up there, he's kicking the grass, and nothing gets up. And I was like, yeah, it must be old scent or something. And he like kicks the grass a little more, a hen pops up, hits him right in the ass. Yeah, it never turns out to be a rooster for you, though.
No, never. I can't be that lucky. I'd miss anyway.
Two good buddies, and we'd hunted their field, and we were done, and my dogs were on point. They wanted to see how my setters worked, and one of them's going to buy one from me, this litter here. And we were back to where we'd started, and both of my dogs, Reggie and Buck, my main hunting dogs at this time, were on point. And we walked up and we saw the rooster's tail feather, and there was like three of us, and it was right in the middle of us. And we're like, oh shit. And it flew up, and we all missed it multiple times. So it happens.
I tell you.
Yep.
If I just have to react and shoot, it's
more likely to get it.
Right. For some reason, the guys that I hung with, they're like, yeah, I agree. Like, there's some times we got sharp tail on, and it's like, and they know the bird's there, and they start walking up there, and they're like, I just freeze.
Yeah.
But so you guys are both farmers. Do you guys correlate hunting and farming together? Like when you guys are planting, or like towards habitat wise?
We use some NRCS programs. There's several options that the government will subsidize you to use some of those programs. They don't cover all of our costs to do it. So we're still, it's an out of pocket thing, but there is some government money that will help fund that. One of the programs, and I'm going to butcher the real names, but the gist of it is if you leave your corn stalks X high, they call it like a winter cover program. If you do a cover crop in the fall, it's like more cover for the wildlife in the winter as well. You can do a strip program with buffers around your fields, creek edges, stuff like that. And I had a farm that I did that on, all those things. And then I went a little bit above and beyond, and instead of just putting, brome grass or whatever, just barely met the requirements, I used, some CRP seed mixture that I bought from Pheasants Forever, and tried to up that, and did a couple little pollinator plots here and there. Those pollinator plots will put some birds in your pocket. We do no-till, so we're not burying waste grain. We don't have a lot of waste grain. Equipment's pretty good anymore, but instead of tilling it all up and, making sure that the ground is black, that gets rid of food as well. So, it's conservation minded, and it works well for us too, to do those things, because there are benefits for both sides. The no-till is less diesel fuel and times over the field. The cover crop helps break up the compaction in the soil with the roots. The strip program helps with water filtration. So there's pluses to doing those types of programs on both sides.
Hey, baby.
The kids are getting ready for bed here. Going to do teeth and potty.
You didn't get downstairs.
I didn't get downstairs. This is Heidi.
Hey, Heidi. He's
three. That's Wyatt. He came and hunted here. Remember him? Yeah. All right, go do teeth and potty. Jared, you guys are no-till too, aren't you?
Yeah, we're pretty well all 100% no-till. We got like one bottom that we got some white mold that when we plant beans, so we do a little bit of tillage just to
dry it up just a little bit,
dry it up and just planting corn again. But my grandparents, I don't own any ground. My dad has some, and my grandparents own some. So we don't have a ton of say in all the stuff that we're doing. But as far as putting CRP in, my grandparents do have some. Kind of right behind my house, and then south of me a little ways, they got a CRP. There's probably 15 acres, I suppose. Just a side hill. It was always wet. Didn't raise very good crops. So throw it into some CRP we're no-till. We do a little bit of cover crops. That's kind of where we're at with that, with the habitat.
So like, you guys also have a bunch of terraces, and they do hold birds.
Actually, they do well. I mean, most people don't walk them.
Those are just, you guys just have those build those terraces up?
Yeah,
they've been built up.
Build them up. Their primary is soil erosion. You know, we're fairly hilly. I should say we're rolling gradual hills. Classification. I mean, there's a lot of places we're rolling. Yeah. But I mean, that's what those are for. But they hold birds. I mean, if you were to walk terraces, you'll find a bird somewhere. But
it just goes fact that most of our ground here is tillable, and so where there's any bit of cover, that's where you're going to have your wildlife.
Yeah, right. And some people are bad about, you know, there's a lot of trees and terraces, which is, it looks bad, but I mean, it's also habitat too. You know, some have a little thicker terraces, and you know, you might find a few roosters in there or a covey of quail that's tucked in there. So, I mean, it can be good to hold birds too.
Yeah. I kind of laugh at you guys, but yeah, it's pretty hilly. You can get a little tired after your long day of walking. I'm like, oh yeah, I can't be that bad.
Yeah. We kind of showed you that's all about.
I was like, oh yeah, they actually do have hills.
Yeah, we hunted some nasty shit.
Jared sent me down this one because some guy.
Oh, said, that's funny.
He saw like 30 quail going to this one, like,
we were just finishing up.
Yeah.
No, we were just starting. I think we were just starting that one spot. And he is actually a great uncle of mine. And he pulls up and he was out looking for coyotes and stuff. He said, hey, I got, seen a whole bunch of quail like right over there. Okay, perfect. We're going there next. And I, you know, it wouldn't have surprised me where he's seen them. You know, it's like, oh, I can believe that. And we pop over, there's two little pockets and we got to the first one and Wyatt's way down in the bottom of the hill. And, you know, I'm kind of on this side and I caught a glimpse of birds and there was a lot of them, but I didn't know what it was. I had my suspicions. And so we got up the top of the hill.
I had to make the trek up the hill. That was the worst. I was like, you sent me all the way down there for some meadowlarks.
Yeah, it was a nice covey of meadowlarks.
Whole
herd of meadowlarks. Oh, we would have had a heyday though. There was a lot of them.
There was one hen like right at the bottom of that thing.
Oh yeah, there was. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that's whatever you want to call that little cutout. That was pretty steep down there.
Yeah, it was very steep.
It was, and Jared's like, yeah, that's why I sent you down there. Or just went on this side.
Yeah, I think the birds are down there, Wyatt.
I went up and I was like, yeah, he's walking about a 60-degree angle back up the hill here.
Yep. It's a different style of walking. And if you got any birds in your bag.
That one that was so wavy, you know what I'm talking about?
No, he's talking the one that. Like, actually, that's where Wyatt shot his bird, where I got it on video. That's the one that's a hilly he's talking about. Too. Yeah, luckily we were only 200 yards in, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that thing's like an accordion.
Yep.
Yeah, we didn't make it very far, and then if we actually would have had another one, we probably would have been done, because Cash had another one on point.
Yep, right. We were walking back,
had the one in the corn, but yeah, I think it's not walk that one very long.
No, it's a long walk, and like Steve said, it's just like an accordion. It's just hill after hill, and
it's not as smooth. There's holes and mounds and anthills, and that's a tough piece. I like
it. that's why we got pieces like that, because it's not practical for farming, and so they put those in CRP programs and you know run with it.
Just like here, you get places that are too low in elevation and a wet year, they just sit with water and they all become cattails, so they can't farm that.
Yep, can't do anything with it anyway.
Right. But in the dry years, they will freaking mow the freaking cattails now.
Sometimes
get that extra acre.
Yep.
But getting into the kennels. When and how did you guys, Steve, you got started a little earlier than Jared, but and how did you guys get started?
So I've shared this a few times on other podcasts, but I read a book It was called Big Red by Jim Kiergaard. It was a story about a boy who falls in love with an Irish setter. And, you know, he had a kennel that he was working for and helping this guy. Anyway, I thought that was pretty great. And I found a pair of Irish setter dogs here in Iowa. Somebody sold as a breeding pair. And that was my segue into the dog world right there. I started as a kid. I was, man, 12 or 13, because I know I took puppies out in a tractor. I was checking my traps on the farm and I saw a rooster and I went and grabbed, some pups. I had a big pup named Moose that I really was fond of. I remember I grabbed Moose and a couple others and I took them in the tractor down to the creek and got them on that bird. And boy, they liked that. And then after that, it was just, I never had any desire to have anything other than setters, but I had Irish all the way through college and, graduated from Iowa State in 2011, December of 11, and I did not have any activity with the dogs at that point. I was, you know, entering the working world. I was a merchandiser for ADM. I bought grain and then agronomist and co-op manager and et cetera. But I got a English setter when my wife and I were dating named Mick, and he was an older dog and I really liked him, and I could tell. I took him hunting and I was like, this dog has got a ton of drive. My Irish, they wouldn't hunt. They were somebody introduced them to gunfire and screwed him up. They were gun shy as hell. And so fast forward to I think 2020, we got Reggie. And Reggie, my main stud dog, who many people have got the pleasure to hunt with. I kept hearing, you know, guys like, that's a really good dog. That's a really good dog. So I went on the prowl and found some females that I bought as best as I could with, you know, my budget. And I've been very successful with the pairings and crossings that I've got. I've got three breeding females, and every single one of those crossings have produced multiple hunters, which I think is so cool. With social media, you can follow somebody, you know, if your puppy goes to Timbuktu, you can see him, because the world became kind of flat with social media. And the short story is that I had Irish and got into the English because their drive was there. And I like hunting behind them, and I like sharing that joy with others. And it gives me something to do on the farm that I thoroughly enjoy. That isn't something that I view as, you know, a pure work type of project. So that's how I got into it. I'm not going anywhere. I'm a big fan of them, and I love where we're at and how we're doing it. And I'm hopeful just to keep continuing on raising English setters forever, I guess.
Nice. Yeah, so like I said earlier, I've had short hair since I was 14, so 21 years, I guess. And I got, she lived, my first short hair lived till she was 15, I think. And then I went a year without a dog. You know, I didn't plan ahead like a guy should have. You know, I didn't get another dog started. And so I went a year without one. And you know, got one the next year, and after that it's like, this is never happening again. And just really fell in love with it right away again, and got addicted to it. And pretty much right after, Jax is four now, a little over four, and he was not even a year old, and I thought, yep, I want to start doing this. And so then I reached out for a female, and I got put on about a 2-year wait list. You know, I really got diving into the lines and looking at different kennels and kind of the route that I wanted to go is I kind of wanted to cross a little bit with the DK lines, the German lines. And so that's my female now, Ember. She's a year and a half. I'll be breeding her this summer, and she's half DK. And I've got another female, Ash, she's 7 months old. She's 3/4 DK. And then I'm getting a full DK next year. And that's kind of the route I'm going, kind of kind of mixing a little bit with the DK lines. I really like what they have. I just think their drive is really cool. They're very well driven and just their style. I like the build on them. They're just a little bit more, in my opinion, they're a little bit more meatier. And I kind of like that on the short hairs. Yeah, a little stouter.
And, yeah, your dogs are a little stouter than mine.
Right. Yeah. And at least for Ember, you know, she's got the DK in her and you can definitely tell she's a little thicker.
Mine are just tall, lanky.
Yeah. I can't remember which one is it. Riggs. He's the taller one.
Yeah.
Riggs.
Cash is a little stouter. I'd have to go back and look at Cash's papers, see what.
Yep. Yep. But, so anyway, back to. Go ahead.
You want to explain what DK is, just so everybody.
The Deutsch Gutzar. It's DK is German for.
Yeah.
Or Deutsch Gutzar is German for German short hair. I have the Hegehaus lines. That's the oldest bloodline there is in the Germans. So that's kind of what I really was looking into and talking to a couple other breeders. And I mean, that there was a pretty long wait list and I was willing to wait to get the lines that I wanted to really start my kennel. So I've been at this for, you know, 3.5 years and still haven't had a litter yet, but this summer will be the first. So.
And not everybody knows it, but Jerry's got a pretty badass kennel.
Oh yeah.
Nice.
It definitely it's turned into small. More than what it was supposed to be. But this summer I took on a pretty big project. And after it's all said and done, I walk into it every day and kind of pinch myself. It's pretty cool. So you have to look me up on Instagram or Facebook and see for yourself.
Because what was that? He said it was an old hog barn?
Yeah, it was an old hog house. Yep. Yep. So it's was an old hog house, and now it's a new dog house.
But yeah, his pretty wife, well. Everything trouble, got sent to the house, not the dog house.
Yeah, I try to stay out in the kennel as much as I can. It's got I put heated floors in it, so this winter it's been really nice.
It's the Ritz for the dogs.
I know.
It's nice. What do you do, though?
I like now, it. Steve's it's nice and clean, and it's I like to keep it clean, and it's pretty nice.
He's got a nice place too.
Yeah, mine's older and it's got a little more space to it, but it's not as technically advanced as Jared's. I've got heated buildings for him, and it's an old hog setup too, converted for dogs, and got a whelping room that I got. You know, I got spray foam in my main shed, and in the whelping room, and tinned out. I don't know if it was tinned when you got here. I got the interior tinned, and got table in there now that flips up. And
we got to christen the new table though.
That's right. Yeah, that was nice. But
we had some grain belts.
Yeah, that's a good day right there.
Yeah, we shot. We did pretty good in the snow.
Yeah, beautiful. I love hunting in the snow, but yeah. I like my setup too. I need to put some floor drains in, figure that situation out. I think I've got a plan for that, but that'll be a summer. I'm not doing that in the wintertime.
You got a lot of options. You got a lot
of space. It's big.
A lot of space to deal with. That's what's mm-hmm. nice.
Yeah. But those old buildings, nothing square. So you're kind of,
I know that's how mine was too.
It's beyond nice for a dog, but it's not right. As nice as Jared's.
Yeah.
Jared's is nice.
Oh, Jared's is nice. He's got the nice bath when you come inside. He's got you got a whelping room, don't you? Like,
yep.
In the
yep.
works.
No, it's there. It's there. Yep. I mean, I haven't got a crate putter together or anything, you know, some place for them to have pups on, but I got an 8x8 room in there with floor drain and, yep.
Floor drain outside too. Isn't there a drain outside too?
In the main kennel part, yeah, there's a floor drain the whole length of the kennels. And then on the outside, I have it's just sloped. I got 5x10 outside kennels. And that's got just a little bit of slope to get any, you know, urine or anything off the pad. And I frequently power wash it. And then on the inside, they got 5x5s. With a Curon to bed and Yeah. So yeah, pretty nice.
They're staying at the Ritz there. That was dead floor heat.
Yeah, floor heat. That's been a game changer. That's pretty sweet.
You had some dogs with some hair on them. You wouldn't have to have floor heat.
I know. But I kind of like to come in and I can lay on the ground and take a nap. And
yeah, you're a bum. I sleep while you're standing. Right? Like a horse.
Yeah.
So we kind of covered what you guys wanted to start breeding. When you guys pick new dogs, what are you guys looking for in your dogs to like add a dog to your string?
I'm kind of looking for a reputable breeder. You know, I do a lot of research on websites and looking to see what they have for lines. And then I like to look at like OFA lines or OFA scores. And, you know, if they've taken time to have their dogs, health clearances, up to specs on that, you know, they're not just breeding a dog with poor hips or anything like that. And short hairs they don't have that much problem. Yeah. They're not really known for that, but you know, I have a good buddy that has, English golden retrievers and you got to keep an eye out with those. But at least with the short hairs, I'm pretty lucky. You don't have to worry about that too much, but I still think it's something that is good to do. I mean, I have Jack's OFA'd. He's got excellent hips and normal elbows, I think. And
normal
then,
is pretty normal. That's very common for right. elbows. It's almost always normal on elbows.
Yeah. And then whenever she gets, you know, to be two, that's when you have to get that done. I'll have that done as well. But so
she's
that's
up on two, isn't she?
Yeah. Yeah. She'll be two in July. So, yep.
Yeah. Kind of same. My dogs are OFA hip and elbow, the genetic testing and all that stuff. You know, you want to put another toolbox in your toolbox to show that you're doing what you can to produce the best pup possible and use good bloodlines. You know, I'm really a huge fan of Krause Ridge and Long Gone and Tekoa, and I've got Shadow Oak Bow in mine. Kind of you're looking for those names that you recognize, that you know, you want to know that, you know, trial bloodlines. That's proof that dog's got some prey drive and it's got some go in their bloodline, something that they can work off of. Second thing I'm looking for is the build and confirmation. I like a setter with a high tail set, and when they're down lower, not to be too specific, but there are certain lines where the tail set is lower on English setters, and that doesn't look good to me. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just the way the tail is set, right? It's like blonde hair versus brunette, but personal preference, confirmation. I want a good stout dog. I like a little heavier dog. You know, we are hunting in some hills and we're not afraid to go put 10 miles on our feet. Well, if we're doing that, what's the dog putting on? I want to have a real capable, healthy dog, which field bred trial line setters are known for being, you know, pretty healthy and capable. So you're just overall looking for something that pleases you and checks all those boxes, and, you know, do business with people that you trust and have, you know, a record of trustworthiness.
So kind of going in what you kind of just said, do you have, I know Jared hasn't had a litter on the ground yet, but Steve, do you kind of vet people like before they buy, they got to go to like hunting home or.
Yeah. I obviously preface, hunting families, and I like to ask a few simple questions, and I've got a little, you know, I just copy and paste it. Most people will be able to answer that by what they say. And when they ask for a dog, like, hey, I'm looking for another hunting dog. I've had English setters in the past. You know, I asked, do you have enough space to exercise the dog? Do you hunt? Why do you want an English setter? Have you had an English setter? Just a few questions, try to get to know them. And, I mean, these are hunting dogs, and English setters do well in the house because they're not a guard dog. They're not a herd dog. They're not made for those jobs. They're made to go hunt, and they're made to be a gentleman's dog, a family dog, and they do well in the house, but that's not saying they can go without adequate exercise. I mean, they, a tired dog is a good dog. So if you can take a hunting breed and give it enough exercise and structure to its life, it'll be fine. And I have people like that that do purchase dogs that do not hunt, but are doing obedience or have an acreage and have had them. I want to know that they're going to a good home. And I've got into this before. I had one come back, a man bought one and they were doing excellent with it. His son-in-law bought one and they did very poorly with it. And they weren't aware of, I don't think they bit off more than they could chew. And I took the dog back and rehomed it. Asking a few questions can definitely save you some grief and effort in the long haul by knowing that it's going to a home where they know what they're getting into. So yes, it is necessary to kind of research, and social media allows you to click on a guy's profile and say, all right, they're wearing a NAVDA shirt, or they've got hunting dogs, and you can see that they're active and doing that. That's been nice too, to be able to use technology to just, you know, vet somebody by just looking on their profile.
Right. And each dog is different too, just their personality wise too.
Yep, for sure.
So I got that firsthand. I got one that's got, he doesn't, I'm not saying energy, but he's got energy. And he doesn't like to be left alone. And I got one dog that could, if he hunts all day, he might sleep all weekend. But what are just a couple of things if you're, breeding's not for everybody, obviously. And what's just some information, someone that's like, hey, I want to do this, what is maybe do's or don'ts? If somebody's looking to get their own kennel started.
I've had people message me and want to know about how to start a kennel and, you know, get going. And I just asked them very simple questions like, does your dog hunt? Does it have proven records that it is capable of doing what you're advertising? Are you doing this because you're trying to make money, or you want to produce a product that will provide its lifetime of joy and happiness for the purpose it was bred? Is the dog OFA hip and elbowed? Have you done genetic testing? Are you aware of what these lines are and how they play with each other? You know, you get a lot of these guys who'll take a dog and breed it to their neighbors because they have the same breed. You know, that's not to say that's everybody's, it's this America, do what you want, right? Freedom of choice. But man, do your homework and do right. Don't be a bum and create something that you're doing because you want to make money. It's got to be something that adds value to the breed, has a reason for being there and a purpose, and it knows its role and it's got a job. I mean, create something like that if you're going to get into breeding. You know, be aware that it's not just puppies born, puppies sold. You got to feed that female and that male all year round. You've got, you know, shots, vet visits, whelping, you know, all the shots that go on with that, worming, you know, the cleanliness of the kennel. It just, if you're not willing to, you know, spend time doing it every single day, you probably better not be getting too involved with breeding. You got to be available. Livestock requires care, and if you don't do it, who is? So it's a pretty big investment in time and dollars, and you gotta be there, you gotta be willing to put in the work.
Jared, do you have anything to add on that one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a ton of experience with it yet, but you know, I feel like I've done my research, I'm willing to wait the time that I feel is necessary to get the proper lines, and, you know, looking for,
you've done everything health. That I've said, you did.
Yeah.
The health,
looking for the health clearances. Yeah. I mean, when I first started this, I wasn't, you know, Steve and I really hadn't been hunting yet. You know, I would already kind of said that this is what I was going to do. And, you know, having Steve as a little bit of a guide too has been really nice. you know, I pick his brain a little bit just because he's kind of been through everything. And you know, that's what I'm looking for is doing all that stuff, you know, doing what it takes to keep the kennel clean, do, you know, run the dogs and, you know,
healthy, train the dogs and, all the time. You've got it. Yeah. You've researched your lines. You've proven that you've got hunters. You are not just out there. Okay. I've got a dog and I'm going to make puppies.
Yep. Yep. And that's, you know, I'm trying to stand out with my kennel so that I feel like that's what's necessary to go through, I guess. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's what I have to add to that.
If you wanted to look at a beginning breeder, you've done it exactly how I think it should be done. You've taken your time. You've looked into it. You've created a safe, healthy environment. You know what you're going to do well because you've done your back work, right?
Right. Yeah. We'll see.
So yeah, both guys' dogs pretty good hunters too. I can vouch for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
All right, so we're getting kind of near the end of our show here. So what we usually do is we ask a handful of questions, you guys. A little pop and go here. So first one, we'll just do this one. Jared, he's on the top. And we'll go to Steve after him. What's your favorite upland bird to hunt?
So we have, you know, obviously we got more pheasant around here, but I really like to get into quail. It's just a gentleman's bird. I mean, they hold tight for the dogs to, you know, work, and you can kind of bust the covey up and you could pick out a few singles if you wanted. They're just a lot of fun. The explosion of the covey rise is, you know, I know Wyatt was really looking forward to it. And I think he's seen that firsthand and kind of understands what that's like. But that'd be my first choice is the quail. I like the quail. Pheasants are awesome and fun to shoot, but quail is a lot of fun.
Yeah, quail's pretty fun. It's hard to beat a quail, but I think if I had to pick one to hunt, I'd hunt a rooster. They're big and beautiful, and boy, they can really boogie, and they hit those jet streams. They can fly faster than a quail, but they're not as shifty. I don't know. You know, shooting a big meaty quail or a big meaty pheasant is pretty hard to beat. I would be glad to shoot either one, but if I had to pick, I think I'd shoot the roosters.
Can't go wrong with roosters.
What's that?
I said you can't go wrong with invasive.
Nah, roosters. Big old rooster. They're beautiful. They're fun to shoot. They look cool. Like
they are challenging for the dogs. They can be. You get into late season, they can be very challenging. But
when you get a really good, especially like a late season point on a rooster and it all comes right. to, I mean, that's hard to beat.
Quail
is always good, but I think there are some exceptional times with pheasants that can have a little bit of spotlight to them.
Yeah.
You're telling me that moment where you, with you and I, Steve, with that was quail this year.
That was wonderful.
It was nice to watch.
Reggie went on point. My main man, and it was very little cover, and I thought, what the heck, you know, and a bird got up and flew away, and for half a second I thought, darn you, Reggie, that's a Tweety bird, and I dropped my gun and shot the first quail. The second quail got up, I shot the second quail. A third quail got up, I shot the third quail. Fourth quail got up, I didn't fire, which my gun had jammed, but I hadn't pulled the trigger. I thought, that's enough. And so yeah, shooting three quail, that was sweet. That was exceptional. Won't trade that memory in for anything. But I if I had to pick one bird, it'd be roosters.
All roosters. All right, here's a tough one for you guys. Favorite breed of dog, but it can't be one you own or have owned.
So I guess for me, I mean, after hunting with Steve Setters, I like the Setters. They're a lot of fun to hunt behind. I like that the style that they have. But if it's not a Setter, you know, I've hunted with a couple poodle pointers, and they're kind of a unique dog. I think that's kind of a interesting dog. I don't really like the coat of the dog, but I kind of like the way they hunt.
I've hunted with a couple poodle pointers. I got the more, they looked almost just like a short hair though.
Yeah. The ones that I've been with, I mean, I think they look like a wire hair or a drop myself, but a little longer hair. But maybe that's, you know, I've only hunted with a couple.
I said a couple I had both had like a little slimmer coat, but then the only like more like a wire hair. They just had the mustache kind
of. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
But I know what you're talking about, though. I know I've seen some that got the big coats and
longer
coats.
Real coarse coat.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a gal on our hunt that had one like that. Otto, who's a great dog. That dog hunted great. I agree. Yeah. But the coat is not for me, I don't think. It's just like everybody, you know, Ford, Chevy, you know, personal preference. I would pick a short hair for myself. They play well with the setters, the energy, intensity. I had a short hair who he was one of the baddest. And I would go back to a short hair if I couldn't have setters. I also had the opportunity to hunt with a Springer Spaniel, which is a flushing breed, of course, but that breed interests me too. I wouldn't say no if the right opportunity came along, but I would much rather have a pointing dog, and I would go German short hair. But I do, the poodle pointer intrigues me as well, but the coat throws me. So I don't know, maybe that's a little vain, but short hair, I guess, would be my short answer.
Can't go wrong with both. It was fun that the one day that you and I got out, it was fun. Well, yeah. It was just me. We had the short hair and we had both Reggie and
Buck
and Cash and Riggs, and we got in the one field, and it was like, I got one of your dogs on point over here.
They're over here.
We got one over here. It was. Then we finally stopped and we got to the end of the field and we were like, yeah, there's usually a bird in the corner, but we went in the corner and no bird and didn't really think anything of it. And I thought Cash was getting a drink of water, but here he was on point. The rooster
sweet.
The bottom of the ditch and rooster got up and Steve dropped his water bottles and got the rooster. But yeah, that was a fun duel. And we had the all short hair team out the other days.
Yep.
Yeah. But short hairs and setters got a lot of drive. They're pretty fun to hunt behind. If you want a really, you know, nostalgic style hunt, you can't go wrong with those breeds right there.
No, it was a lot of fun. It was the first time too. Like, I've never hunted with a setter before. I've seen them before, but never hunted with one. And that was my first time. And that was, I mean, that was a blast. And we got that little bit of snow too, and I think it helped her hunting.
But yeah, held them a little bit.
All right. Favorite memory from this past season?
I'm gonna say the whole month of November. we were pretty busy with the women's hunt, with the flush. You came to town and everything. It was a lot of fun the whole month of November, but I don't know, just watching my female Ember, this was really her first actual season, and just watching it really click. I mean, right at the end of the year, you know, she was 5 months old last year, and she actually brought me four birds that last weekend, retrieved a hand. So that was really cool. So I had a lot of high hopes for her. So then this year, just watching it click with her again, you know, just, she's got a really stylish point, and, you know, she honors every dog. She'll honor a dog from 50 yards away. You know, just anytime she sees one, she's, you know, freezing.
Yeah, and she's going to be hot.
Yeah. And then now with my puppy, I've been taking her the last, you know, right at the end of the season. And she's been, you know, showing the same characteristics, you know, honoring points and got her first point. So, you know, it's been a pretty memorable season. Just watching it click for the younger dogs. So that's probably what I'm going to say.
Mine's easy. It's shooting that rooster on the McCone farm, the family land up in South Dakota. Shot it, and it flew out of some real tall stuff. It was crossing left to right, and it was real tall. Oh, that reedy grass that's kind of orangish, you know, 10-foot tall stuff, and it flew out, and I dropped it onto the frozen pond, and then Reggie ran out there and got it and brought it right back to me. So I mean, that memory is seared into my brain. I'm getting that bird mounted, so that's number one for sure. But there was a lot of good moments. The women's hunt was a huge highlight. That was so much fun. Those gals were awesome. Hunting with the flush was good. You know, getting out with Jared several times was all good. It just had a lot of good moments. Glad that you could come and hunt with us, and just was a pretty, pretty great season.
Yeah, you guys hunt with a lot of people. How many do you have a count? How many people actually came that you guys hunted with this year?
Oh, man. Like in that 1 week, I had like 25 people that stayed at my house. I had, you know, the women's hunt, and then Adam Ryla from the UP stayed with us during the week with the flush. And then I had like a dozen buddies there Friday night, Saturday night. So, yeah, I mean, when it's hunting season, our house basically becomes a motel. But we don't charge.
Off topic, is it easier to hunt? Is it hard to hunt with a camera watching you?
Yeah, you forget it pretty quick. You know, they do such a good job staying where they can get good footage and, you know, trying to catch it all, that not really, you forget about it pretty fast.
Jared, you're new to being filmed.
Yeah. He's a veteran. I mean, like you said, you kind of forget about it. I mean, there was a lot of people that were hunting with us when the flush was here, and, you know, lots of dogs, and, you know, just trying to watch all the dogs. I mean, so it pretty well took your focus away from the camera and just focused on the hunting. I mean, unfortunately, when they were here, it was ungodly windy. It was terrible. So it was
the windiest week in November for sure.
I wouldn't have hunted if it was that windy, you know, just on a regular day. It was terrible. You know, basically, you're shooting missiles, you know, that are, how far do you lead them? Yeah. Like you said, we still did good.
You'd never get to hunt if you did that here in North Dakota.
Yeah, that's true.
It was windy as heck.
One thing that stays the same, it's always going to be usually windy in the days that it doesn't. You're like, holy shit, it's awesome. It's not blowing 20. All right. Next question. What gun are you shooting right now? What gun's on the wish list?
We shoot the same gun.
Yep.
A5 Sweet 16. It's a badass. If you haven't tried a 16 gauge, you're missing out. I have no intentions. I was at the gun store and I looked at a brand new one exactly like mine. I was like, yeah, I probably need a second gun. Like, what am I doing? Like,
you always do the second gun.
Yeah.
That's 16. No, sweet.
You got that Benelli.
Which one? Oh, my A28U. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good gun. It shoots a little different. It's more trappy style. You shoot a little under your target. It seems to shoot a little higher, which is a little bit different instead of kind of covering your target. I did take some roosters with that this year. I only took it on one hunt. I did shoot a limit with it, but and then I took it on Sunday with Jared for quail. So I don't know if I'm in the market for any guns at all. A side-by-side 16 with interchangeable chokes would be sweet, but not anything that I'm actively searching out. I've got an AYA 16 gauge. It's a Spanish made gun. Fortunately and unfortunately, they only build custom guns, but that gun was not built for me. And I'm 6'2", and this gun was built for somebody at least a foot shorter than me. So it doesn't fit me very well, but damn, the girls will have a nice gun someday.
Yeah, so I'm shooting the same gun. I got an A5 Sweet 16. Love it. I started out with a TriStar over and under 16, and I started having some issues with it. I want to trade it. So maybe this next year I'll get something different, but what I'd really like to get is a Beretta Silver Pigeon. Those are sweet. I shot on the ladies hunt. I shot a turkey with one of the girls' 28 gauge Silver Pigeon and just folded it out of the air. That was pretty sweet. After that, I'd probably go with like a Franke Affinity, I think it is. I think those are pretty sweet guns too. But the Beretta is definitely on the top end. That's what I'd like to at some point.
I'll sell a pigeon of the breeding.
They're nice. And I never shot one before until I, shot hers, and it swings nice. And I never shot a 28 gauge until that day either.
Yeah, Michael won't give me his 28 gauge to shoot. So,
what was that?
I said Michael doesn't give me his 28 gauge to shoot either. So,
no, that's mine. That's mine.
They're nice. They claim they're the best patterning gun out there. I mean, Tyler Webster shoots it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. And I, when I read that too online, when I first saw it, because I saw it in my local Shields, and I used to live in Bismarck, and it was like a used one. And I'm like, oh, I should look up 28 gauge. I haven't really heard much about it. And it said it was, one of the best patterning shotguns you could shoot. And I'm like, oh, man,
nice.
You know, I need all the help I can get. So, yes, I'm getting it.
Right. What kind?
It's a Mossberg SA28. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So the next gun I buy will probably be something for the kids. You know, they already have some stuff in the thing, but I'm always kind of looking for the kids. I'm happy where I'm at with my firearms right now. I don't feel that I need any more.
No, I'm looking at 28 gauges. I just don't know what I want. If I want to go side by side, or if I want to just stay with my over under. I think to shoot the over under is pretty decent. So it's a two trigger. I had a side by side all season too that I shot off and on 20 gauge too, but the double trigger just seems to get me.
Yeah,
I shot it all grouse season, which was fine because I had both my fingers not in gloves. But like late season, it gets tough.
Cumbersome.
You're trying to figure out which trigger you pulled. It's like, oh crap! I pulled the back trigger. I did that with a rooster. Just absolutely demolished it. It was a farther shot too, crosser, and I was shooting the new Boss War Chiefs, and they say it patterns really well on the full choke. Yeah, it definitely does, because that thing had, like, bird came back nice, looked good, pulled the breast out, or went to open it up, breast gone. Just a hole right through the breast.
Mm.
I was like, yeah, they weren't lying. They said it patterned pretty nice out of the full choke. But 28 gauge is on my list. I just don't know if I want. I've looked at the front, like a Franke Instinct SLX, I believe, and a couple CZs, a Fair Eyesight. I just don't know what I want. So someday I'll figure it out.
Might be mistaken, but I think CZ makes a side by side 16 with interchangeable, and somebody was gonna probably comment I'm right or wrong. Condor, maybe. Condor's a die. CZ makes one. I forget their name, and I looked at them.
Probably a Sharptail, I think. Or
don't know. I know they make one that's fixed, and they make one that is, or maybe it's not. I don't know. It's out there. Brother, I've looked at it. I haven't looked in a couple of years.
The side by side I was shooting this year had interchangeable chokes, so that's the Bob Boyd. And for $700, it's actually not a bad gun.
Yeah,
I didn't know. I just don't know if I like the double trigger. And I'm sure I can get used to it the more I shoot it too. But and I didn't have a problem shooting birds with it. It's a different stock too. It's a straight stock English. English straight stock to where my over under's pistol
type grip. Well, the pistol grip will take a little recoil out of your shot, and the English stock will raise a little faster.
Yeah. No, shooting a side by side is pretty fun though. It's when I thought about bringing it with the Bobs, and I was like, because it's kind of like goes kind of hand in hand. I feel like shooting,
right. Side by side
with side by side pointing dogs. Just like
you wanted to get one though too.
I was like, I also shoot my over under really well, so I don't really want to chance it.
In February of last year, I got a hunt down in Mississippi at Prairie Wildlife. It's a Orvis Lodge down there with the flush, and the owner, this guy's Mr. Jimmy. He's in his 80s, low 90s. He's an older gentleman, and he went hunting with us, and we shot a pair over my Reggie dog. He shoots a side by side, and it's probably 20, 30, 40, I don't know, $1,000 gun, super high end shit, right? And I'm like, that's a beautiful gun. And he goes, yeah, those over unders. I never shot one of those, because if God wanted you to shoot an over under, he'd have put your eyes stacked on top of each other. And he shoots a side by side.
Oh, they're nice guns. And I have a 410 too that I shoot. It's just getting that double trigger. And I feel like my main problem is I shoot it with gloves on every once in a while. And that's where it comes cumbersome.
Just pull them both.
I should, but then what if I can double?
Get them when they're crossing. Does that count as one shot or two then?
Yeah. Yeah, two shell holes. So go with two shots.
I got an old Ithaca Flues, and it's a great big long Damascus barrel 12 gauge, and it was made for smokeless or for black powder, excuse me. And I have used it, and I know that is not something you should do, and it has not been used in years. But one of the first times I used it, and I'm talking used it like twice, both barrels went off, and it came up and smacked me in the face, gave me a bloody nose, and the trigger guard rode down my middle finger and just gouged the shit out of it. And those old side-by-sides can be kind of fickle. You got to be pretty careful using that old stuff.
Oh, yeah. My grandpa used to have my grandpa was back in the day of always bigger, better when it came to waterfall. You know, like had to be 3.5-inch wallets or 3-inch slugs or anything else. He also had side-by-side 10 gauges.
Oh, man.
And my cousins, a couple of my cousins both got them because they used them when they used to hunt with them when they were kids. But they talked about how they would, made bets with each other to, like, pull both triggers. Barrels. Same. Oh. I was like, gosh. Like seeing 10 gauge ammo is pretty freaking big, especially because I think they're all 3.5-inch. So last question for you boys. What's on the horizon for you guys this upcoming season, year with the kennels, hunting?
Yeah, so I'm planning, obviously having my first litter here this summer. It'll be late summer, but, that's pretty big for me, I guess. It's been a long time coming. Very excited for it, and just it's been really neat just with social media. I kind of started Instagram just for this, and just amazing how many people have reached out already. Just love your dogs, and tell me about your kennel, and tell me about your dogs, and I've already got a pretty decent little list on people that are interested in the first litter. So that's gonna be kind of cool. I got people from different states, and pretty excited to just meet new people, through the dogs. Social media has brought, I've met people through social media like you, just posting on stuff, but now my dogs are actually going to, meet new people. I'm going to meet new people through the dogs, and that's going to be pretty cool. Next season, I'm hoping to, I'd like to make it up to North Dakota and, shoot some of these other species that are out there. And, other than the pheasants and quail that we have around here, I'd like to go shoot at something different. Be pretty cool. But that's kind of what I favorite. Got going. Yeah, there you go. And that's what's great about social media. I mean, it's good and bad. I mean, social media can be a terrible thing, but I feel like, at least in the upland world, I mean, most people are really cool. If you actually learn to talk to somebody and, you always find interests that you guys share the same interest, or, oh, this guy's does this, that's really unique. Or, it's really cool to see where all these people come from and, And most people, you know, several people have messaged me, you know, you should come out to Montana, or you should come this way, or, you know, it's just crazy. And I've always said the same thing. So, you know, you were able to come out. So that was really fun to hunt with you.
Yeah, well, it was a blast. I appreciate you guys having me too.
Absolutely. Yeah, anytime.
Welcome to stay anytime. Yeah. Ditto what Jared said. I'd like to get to Kansas and chase some quail. That's been on the radar for quite a while. If Adam Riley, so I've got two dogs with a gentleman who's a guide. He lives in California, and he has taken my friend Adam quail hunting in Arizona, and I have verbally committed to do that next year. They invited me to come down. So maybe Kansas and Arizona chasing bobs. Here I am, the diehard rooster guy, kind of planning to chase quail. Other than that, I don't think I have anything too crazy. I'm going to be at Pheasant Fest with our buddy Jake Perry. He invited me to share his booth, so I'll be down there in March. And looking forward to that. We are going to give away a hunt here in Iowa, a pheasant hunt, and be selling T-shirts and hats and stuff like that. Just hopefully meet a lot of cool people and keep the dogs healthy and the kids healthy and the pigs healthy. Just keep going forward.
Yeah, like Jared said, and getting back to social media, it's a nice thing. It brings people together. And the last few years, I've been able to meet new people on social media, became good friends with some I've repeated hunted this year with and multiple times. My buddy Tim Wagerman, I shot a few YouTube videos with him, and then met my buddy Jake Perry. He pulled into a Casey's in middle of nowhere, North Dakota, and we hunted the next day, and I hunted with you guys. And yeah, don't be afraid to meet your Instagram friends.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's anytime I see somebody that's posting cool stuff, you know, I'll be sure to just reach out and say, hey, I like what you're doing. And just that little strike up of a conversation, and all of a sudden you're talking, and where are you from, and what do you do? And oh, this is cool. And you know, it's pretty neat. I like meeting new people and just talking to people that have the same interests.
Yeah, I think that's why we all do it too. It's just the social media aspect of having similar interests with people is really nice, and you don't have to deal with all the haters.
Yeah, right.
Any last questions you guys got, or anything you guys want to say before we shut her down?
Well, thanks for having us on. Yeah, I mean, that was a lot of fun. Hopefully was able to avoid some noise from the house, but we're all in the same boat, young dads with kids, and sometimes life happens.
Right. No, I think it's all good besides our technical difficulties, but
hopefully that's piece that to one be together. Expected.
Yeah, we'll just piece it together.
Not too bad for four bird hunters.
Yep. Cool.
Two farmers, a landscaper, and the sales guy, procreator.
There you go.
So where can everybody find you guys on social media? Someone's looking for a dog.
Yeah, so I do Facebook, Wildfire Kennels. I'm not as active as Instagram. My Instagram is wildfire_kennels. I mostly post to Instagram, and then I kind of shared from Instagram over to Facebook, but that's kind of where I do all my stuff. If you have any questions, you can reach out to me, you know, send me a message on that, and you know, we can go from there. But that's where I do most of my stuff. I don't have a website, maybe down the road, but don't have one now. So
same. I don't have a website. Social media gets me a lot of traffic. Hi, Georgie. Got my George pup just will come in. Hey, buddy, can you see him? There he is. Hey, pal. Anyway, Facebook is Cast Iron K, and
Instagram is Cast Iron Kennels, English Sitters. And kind of like Jared, I do most of my stuff on Instagram and then it posts to Facebook. But yeah, try to stay pretty active and post some funny stuff and updates with the dogs and updates from customers and just try to kind of keep a pretty light, entertaining page. And if anybody wants to reach out, that's the best way. My phone number is listed on Facebook, I know. But yep, social media is probably your best avenue to catch me. I do have problems with Messenger. And it doesn't always load and can be irksome, but for initial contact, that is how probably 99% of the people reach me.
Dude, you have puppies on the ground right now too, don't you?
Yes, I do. Yep. I've got a litter of 9, 6 females and 2 males. I've got 1 female available and 2 males, and I just don't do a ton of advertising. I plan to take them to Pheasant Fest. If they don't move first, I'm not going to hold them. And I've got a litter coming. I've got deposit on the next litter coming and deposit for next year. And I just, I like to have the dogs kind of sell naturally. I'm not a used car salesman. I'm not trying to shove them down your throat. I'm not going to bug you and, you know, pester you. Are you still interested? But, yep. If you want an English setter puppy, I've got some pretty good hunters that are available and more on the way.
I can attest both guys do have good hunting dogs.
Yeah. Thanks, Wyatt. You too.
Yeah, you got good dogs too. Yeah, that was fun. Yeah.